Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning into our program today. You may know that Family Talk is a listener-supported program, and we remain on the air by your generosity, literally. If you can help us financially, we would certainly appreciate it. God's blessings to you all.
Today on Family Talk.
Assumptions play a huge role in our everyday lives. It's not a question of if we assume, but how we assume, and then how we can be certain that our assumptions are true. Well, today on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk, author Dave Richardson is here to explain how assumptions are at the heart of science, politics, education, and the law, and why it is so critical for Christians to make sure we are looking at the culture around us using the right assumptions. Here now is guest host Dr. Meg Meeker to introduce today's guest on Family Talk.
Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Meg Meeker, and I'm here at the International Christian Retail Show in Cincinnati, Ohio. My guest today is a remarkable man named Dave Richardson. You're really going to enjoy him because I've enjoyed getting to know him here. He's a thinker who would also call himself a regular guy.
Yes.
The more I talk to you, the more I realize I don't think you're so regular. With a very good talent for helping everyday people understand ideas that scholars and pseudo-scholars purvey. Dave founded and is the president of the Assumptions Institute that began in 2011, and his book, Transparent, How to See Through the Powerful Assumptions That Control You, is some of the fruit of his work through the organization, along with an app that ties in directly with his book. Dave has several postgraduate degrees from the University of Oxford and has worked in ministry for over 30 years, and I'm excited to hear so much more about you and your story, Dave. Thanks for being with me.
Meg, thanks for having me on the show.
You bet. So you hobnob with college professors around the world.
Yes.
But you're an ordinary guy.
Yes.
How do you say that? Why do you say that?
Well, the reason I say that is that while, yes, I do have postgraduate degrees, yes, I do work with college professors, I'm the son of a truck driver. I grew up in a single white trailer house. I know everyday people, everyday language. I come from a little farm town in the Pacific Northwest. And, you know, I know what that life is like in the language that they speak. And I understand that life has to be practical because, you know, I read books like, you know, Modern Physics, Ancient Faith for entertainment, which normal people don't do
that. Never heard of the book. Yeah. Yep. Have you always been an academic?
Well, not in a professional sense, but I've always worked in the academic world.
Okay. So tell me first about your ministry, Assumptions. What is that all about?
Well, the Assumptions Institute is the outworking of the work that I was doing with college professors while I was on the staff of Campus Crusade for Christ. I served with CRU for 30 years.
Okay, so let's back up. You worked with CRU for 30 years working with college professors, and that was new to me. I didn't realize that CRU actually had people that were working with professors. I thought it was directed mostly towards students.
Yes, the ministry started in 1951 with Bill and Bonnie Bright as a ministry to college students at UCLA, and it grew into the amazing ministry that it is today. But in 1980, a fellow named Stan Oakes started a division that was specifically targeting college and university professors. Mm. It is now on just about every college campus where there is a student ministry because the faculty ministry is woven around the student ministry today. It's called Faculty Commons. Mm. And its emphasis is specifically on helping reach professors for Christ and help them to be an effective ambassador for the kingdom on
that
university campuses.
That is a tall order.
Yes. Somebody's got to do it, though.
Somebody's got to do it because college professors tend to be very, very liberal.
Yes.
B, they tend to be filled with knowledge.
Yes.
And C, they often think that they know best about most everything.
Yes. I've experienced that many times.
That's right. So cracking into a personality like that takes another special personality. So you need to be able to dialogue with them on their level.
Yes.
And to, I don't want to say argue, but argue or debate about theological issues. As you found yourself ministering to college professors, did you find that it was mostly you debate about theology, or were you talking more about heart issues?
It was mostly theological issues, because those are the big screens that most professors will put up. You have to get through that before you can get to the hard issues. Mm-hmm. You know, when I did my studies at Oxford University, I specifically selected for my research topic atheist and agnostic professors, trying to figure out how do you reach them for Christ. And that's what I did my entire research project on. I spent hours just having conversations
with them.
You
just don't like keeping things simple, do you?
Oh, no.
Go for the hardest ministry you can find. Really, agnostic and atheist professors.
Yes.
So what did you find?
Well, there's two things that I discovered in trying to reach atheistic professors for Christ. There's two things that repeatedly they told me was the reason that they were atheists, and at the same time, the same reason why they reject the Christian faith. One is they don't think that Christians are very good witness to God and the church. In other words, they
see... they don't like us.
Yeah, they don't like us when they see that, yes, you use that label, Christian, but you don't seem all that much different than anybody else. So in other words, they're asking, is a Christian life really livable? Is a genuine Christian life possible? In the flesh, it's not, but in the power of the Holy Spirit, it is. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the core messages of CREW is the ministry of the Holy Spirit and acquiring God's power to live our lives instead of living it ourselves. But the second thing that I found universally with atheist professors, regardless of whether they were a scientist or an engineer, or whether they were economics professor, or they were a psychologist, or whether they were a literature professor, every one of them would tell me, God is not a very good explanation for where the world comes and how it works. And so, in other words, what they're saying is that God does not relate to the real world.
Okay.
And that turned out to be the key to reaching them for Christ. Because if you come to them as a Christian professor and they see, oh, yeah, you're a nice guy because you're a Christian, you're more ethical, you're more loving, that kind of thing, that did not impress them very
much. Didn't do it, yeah.
But what did impress them is if you could connect God to the world of knowledge, all of a sudden they would stand up and listen.
So was it a creation argument that they use? They said, we don't believe in creationism, or we believe in evolution. Was it that, or was it more, we can't understand that a God would create a world that looks like this?
There's all of those things wrapped into it. They would have a more or less naturalistic view on things. You know, when our life is done, it's done. We're food for plants. You know, there is no afterlife or anything like that. And evolution would be the way that they would explain where the world comes from and how it works. Mm-hmm. The general outlook that you would...
Their perspective.
Their perspective.
Worldview.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Well, kind of. Because actually what I'm doing is something different than worldview. But yes, that is ultimately it. When I would get to the end of some of the interviews with professors, you know, after I'd had my formal questions finished, I'd ask them, is there something that I didn't say that I should have said, or something you want to add to what you've responded to after, you know, an hour interview? I actually had some professors tell me, you know, I'm terribly afraid of dying. And they would say, you know, if you accepted Jesus, or you lived a good life, or, you know, your good works outweighed your bad works, or whatever it is, if you did that thing, it would mean that I would live forever. That's a very appealing thought, but, you know, it involves faith, and I just can't make that connection, you know, because they're very rational
right.
and logical. And so this notion of faith in something, it's just, I can't go there. It just doesn't seem to make a connection.
So they see faith as illogical.
Yes.
But did you point out they have faith in all sorts of things? Faith that their car engine's going to start and get them home?
At the time that I was doing the research, no. I am at that point now because of the work that I've done with assumptions, and I understand what they are and how they work. And at the very core, the bottom line assumption that every person makes is a faith commitment, because an assumption is the thing you believe to be true without questioning it. And oftentimes, there's little or no proof. You know, when you ask a person who's from that perspective, and they say, all there is the natural material world. That's all that exists. Mm-hmm. Do you have any proof for that? All of a sudden, they're scratching their heads. It's because they're backed up against the question of what's here? Right. What's really real? What just is? And anything that just is with no reason,
yeah.
Well, that's faith.
Yes.
that's their faith commitment.
So let's go on and talk about the Assumption Institute, because that's what has grown out of your work at CREW.
Yes.
And working with college professors. What is the Assumptions Institute?
The Assumptions Institute is the new organization that I've created that's focused around this whole new approach to connecting people and their faith to the real world, to their public lives. How is it that you find God and engage with Him in the thing that you're a leader or an expert at, or the thing that you want to be a leader or an expert at? Mm-hmm. You're a Christian, you work in the sciences and engineering. How does God relate to that? Or you're a Christian and you're in economics or in business or in medicine, whatever it is. How do you bring God into the real world of your leadership and expertise?
So why is it called Assumptions Institute?
The reason it's called Assumptions Institute is because the way you make those connections is at the level of your assumptions.
Okay.
Everybody makes assumptions. A lot of times, you know, assumptions have a bad rap. Mm-hmm. You say, oh, be careful how you assume.
Yeah.
Or don't assume, that kind of thing. Well, you can't help it at one level. It's not a question of if you assume. It's a question of how do you assume, mm-hmm. and if your assumptions are true.
Well, and we have so many assumptions we don't even realize.
Yes. In fact, if I were to ask you, what are your basic assumptions? Most people couldn't answer the question. And likewise, if you were to try and figure out what the assumptions another person is proceeding from, they would have no idea.
Right.
And so when we're having a conversation with a non-believer, and we're saying something we think is perfectly persuasive, and we're talking right past the other person, and we're wondering, why is that bouncing off of them like rubber bullets? Well, it's because we fail to discern the assumptions that they're coming from.
So you're really talking about perspective. Understanding our perspective versus another perspective, and perspective is built because of assumptions that we have?
Yes. The assumptions that every person makes is something that they take on faith. It's the thing that they think is really real and just is. And then as you follow where that goes, I ask 8 different questions to help people figure out what their assumptions
are. Okay, let's go through them because I want to know what my assumptions are.
Okay. Well, the core assumption that a person has is an answer to this question. What is really real? What's really here? Before you can have a conversation about anything.
Now you're a philosopher too.
Oh, yes. Before you can have a conversation.
What is real? Yeah. What is really real?
What is really real? Well, there's 3 different ways of assuming that. The first way is to say all there is the natural material world. What's really real is matter and energy. The only thing that exists is a physical reality. The second way of assuming is exactly the opposite of that, and that is to say the thing that's really real is something non-physical, something that's either spiritual or something mental.
But that doesn't make sense.
Of course it doesn't make sense because of a kind of assumption that you and I would make.
But I know you're real because I see you.
Yes.
So why would I assume you're not real?
Because that kind of assumer would say that thing you think is real is a projection on your mind by a higher power, or that everything is really a spiritual reality. You think this is a real world? No, no. Really, it's all divine. That's Eastern mysticism. Or there's another way of assuming that way, and you see this increasingly popular today. You create your own reality. If I can think it and I believe it, I can achieve it. That's the mantra of the positive thinking movement.
Yeah.
And so you actually create reality with your mind.
But that has enormous limits.
Sure.
I mean, you can't make yourself fly if you think it and believe it.
Yes.
Wouldn't even a thinker like that say that? There are limits on my positive thinking?
Not necessarily, because what they have in their mind is the picture of an ideal. So for somebody who is a sociopolitical liberal, progressive, the ideal is the ideal human. The ideal human society, and the belief that we can actually achieve it.
Yeah.
We see the flaws.
Where everybody's equally wonderful to one another.
Yes.
And nobody wants power over another.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
And it's the whole notion that, yes, we see the flaws and faults in humanity, but we can fix it with enlightened guidance and collective effort.
Yes.
And so it's the old perfectibility of humanity outlook that isn't real, isn't true at all.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you have those 3 basic assumptions.
Yes.
That what I see is real and here, and what is real is what I don't see, is what's spiritual.
Yes, and then the third one is how Christians tend to assume. And that is there's not one reality, either a physical one or a non-physical one, but there are 2 realities.
Right.
Those 2 realities is there's the creation.
Well, that's the right assumption.
Of course. It's the and the reason it's the right one is because it corresponds to the real world that actually exists. Mm-hmm. The other ones have logical consistency within themselves, but they don't describe anything that really exists. Therefore, they're false.
It's false. Okay.
And the crazy thing is if there is only a physical reality, or there's only a non-physical reality, or there are two realities. Those are three mutually exclusive starting points.
Right.
Once you buy one, it excludes the other two. And so only one of them can be true.
So when you're talking with a professor, do you basically get down to that point where you're trying to tease out what their fundamental assumption is?
Yes.
Okay.
Because ultimately, in the end,
you talk to them there.
Yes.
And you find that most of them believe assumption which? One, two, or three?
Actually, the most popular one, if you can believe it, is number two.
Seriously?
Yes. The first set of assumptions, all there is the natural material world, a physical reality, by definition is atheistic. But what I've discovered is that most atheists are not type 1. Most of them are type 2. They're humanists.
How?
They have it in their mind that there is an ideal human and an ideal human society, and we really can build it. And so that is the thing that really drives them. And they're not particularly spiritual.
So how do you break that down?
Well, what you do is you usually start...
For them.
What you usually do is you start farther down in my critical assumptions test at the level of where they typically live. Because they're not thinking about that core assumption. That's the biggest assumption that we make and the one that we think about the least. Now, most people are thinking about what's humanity's basic problem, or they're thinking about what's good. Or what human beings are. Those kinds of less deep questions, if you want to say that.
So what you're saying is whichever one of those three assumptions you have is the building block for the rest of your thinking.
It is.
What are some of the other assumptions that you talk about at the Institute?
It's all this whole family of assuming. There's three different ways that people assume, and helping them identify where they are, either themselves, or it is an actual critical thinking structure so that when you're reading a book, and you're wondering, oh, this message I'm getting out of the book, is it true? I don't know. Or I'm watching a TV show or a movie, and I'm receiving a message. Do I need to accept this, or do I need to reject this? I don't know whether it's true. How do I figure it out? Because most of these things are complex issues, and not everybody is an expert at those things.
Right.
In fact, everyday people typically aren't. So how do you make it so simple that they can get at it quickly? If you can get to the assumptions under the message, all of a sudden it's crystal clear whether the message is true or not.
So walk me through that. I'm hearing something on the news.
Yes.
And I'm wondering whether it's true or if it's just somebody's opinion, which, of course, anybody who's reporting is reporting through their perspective or through their assumptions.
Of course.
So how do you discern whether it's true or not? What's the process of going through that? Do you go back down to your first assumption, which is I believe there's a spiritual world and a material world?
No, that will be the final destination.
Final.
That's the final destination. Usually you start with whatever's going on, okay? And you ask yourself, the subject that you're trying to figure out, does it have anything to do with people? If it does, then there are four questions that relate to people. If it doesn't relate to people, it's a question of animals, the universe, you know, God, ultimate reality kinds of things that are not people questions. Then there's four other questions in my critical assumptions test that deal with those.
So I'm trying to figure out if something's true about a person.
Yes.
Okay. So what do I ask?
So then once you figure out that the subject is about a person,
or
there's four
questions.
Give me
an example. What would I want to find out if it's true about a person?
Oh, okay. So let's say we're wrestling with a moral issue. And a person has a particular position on that moral issue. So that is really a question of what is good. That's the seventh question on my assumptions test.
Okay.
And there are three ways that people answer that question that is based off of their core assumption. They just don't realize it.
Mm-hmm.
And those three different ways of answering is the word good, what is good, is whatever I decide it is. That's one way of answering the question. So I'm my own standard. I decide for myself what's right and what's good. Another way that a person would answer it is good is whatever achieves the ideal. So if it's going to help us get to that ideal human, that ideal human society, or the ideal me, or whatever the ideal is the person is focused on, or the spiritual ideal for the New Age spiritualist, the Eastern mysticist, that kind of thing. That's another way of answering the question. Or the third way to answer the question, what is good, is good is who God is in his person and his character. God literally is the definition of what good is.
So we compare that person to that.
Yes. Yeah. So we look at those three different ways of answering the question, mm-hmm. and you say, how is this person answering it? Or which one is the best explanation for it? And when you look at those three, you see that the only one that matches the real world is good is who God is in His person and His character.
But aren't you answering the question, say we're talking about a person who's an alcoholic.
Sure.
Okay. Aren't you answering through going through those questions whether he's right or wrong, not
yes.
true or false? How does that answer truth? How do you find truth in that?
Well, because you know that of those three families of assumptions, one of them matches the real world that we see, know, and experience. The other one, even though they have logical consistency, doesn't describe the real world, and so they are false. And the answers to one of those three questions then is derived from one of those core assumptions. I call them type 1 assumers, type 2 assumers, and type 3 assumers. Christians are type 3 assumers. Materialists, naturalists, those are type 1 assumers. And the other idealists, whether they're spiritual idealists or socio-political idealists, are the middle one, the type 2 assumer. And so what I'm trying to get at ultimately is the core assumption that creates that whole mess.
Okay.
But most people aren't living at that level.
So you find that the assumptions that people make with assumption 1 and then assumption 2, there's a correlation, a thread, like Christians all assume the same thing down the line.
Well,
or the same types of things.
If they're consistent in their assumptions.
Yeah.
The problem is, Barna revealed this in a study about 6 or 7 years ago, that only 9% of people that would call themselves born-again Christians have a consistent way of thinking. 91% don't
have a consistent. Well, maybe it's because we're just not challenged in our thinking.
Sure.
Is that what you're trying to do in your book?
Of course.
Yeah.
I'm trying
to
not just challenge our thinking, but have a practical, real way to get at the real issue and help people align their lives with truth and live it out before a watching world. So can you connect God to your public life, not just your private life?
Mm-hmm. And so my guest is Dave Richardson. His book is fascinating. It's called Transparent, How to See Through the Powerful Assumptions That Control You. If you can accomplish one thing with the book, what is that? What do you want to help people change?
I want them to engage with their faith. That's the biggest problem that the Christian church faces today, is because their faith is important to their personal lives, their devotional lives, their prayer life. It's important in their families, in their marriages. But when it comes to the real world, when they walk out the door and they go to work or they're going to school or wherever it is that they're involved in their day-to-day lives, does their faith make any difference?
Mm-hmm.
Besides the fact that they're a nice person.
Right.
Does God contribute to knowledge in those areas so it changes how you run your business?
Right.
So it changes how you write laws if you're a legislator, or it changes how you do your science in the laboratory.
But you're really getting people to think critically.
Yes.
Which is very cool.
But you know, this has been the fascinating thing for me working with high school teachers. This actually works in a public school, by the way. It's an amazing thing to watch a public school teacher get a hold of this.
You need to write a curriculum that a teacher could use in a school, because kids would love thinking this way.
Yes.
They would love the questions. They would love digging and wondering and coming to conclusions. And if you can get them to come to their own conclusions by asking your questions.
That's the point.
That's the point.
That's exactly what we want to do, because, you know, how many parents are terribly concerned of what's going to happen with their kids when they graduate from high school and they go off to the university or they go out into into a career somewhere. The persistent statistic is anywhere from 60 to 70% of those kids that grow up in a church are going to walk away from their faith. Very few come back. And everybody knows those horror stories. They've seen it and experienced
it. Is it because they don't know how to think?
Yes. And the funny thing is we lay the blame at the foot of the university and say that they're the ones that did it to them. It's not.
No.
We actually did it to our own kids, and we don't realize it.
My guest has been Dave Richardson, and as you can tell if you've been listening to our show, he has given us a lot to think about. Dave started the Assumptions Institute, and he has a book, Transparent, How to See Through the Powerful Assumptions That Control You. And I would encourage all of our listeners to get hold of a copy, if nothing else, to start to think about how you think as a person.
Yes.
How I think as a mom and physician and grandmother, and how my husband will just love this book. But Dave, thank you so much for this wonderful conversation.
Meg, thanks so much.
Yeah.
You're listening to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Roger Marsh, and we have been enjoying a conversation featuring guest host Dr. Meg Meeker and author Dave Richardson as they've been discussing his fascinating book called Transparent, How to See Through the Powerful Assumptions That Control You. You can learn more about this helpful resource when you visit our broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org. And while you're there, be sure to check out the link for Dave's website as well, daverichardson.org. Speaking of assumptions, many listeners assume that a ministry like ours is able to keep going because of a large foundation that provides us with our funding. Well, the reality is Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk is completely listener-supported. We rely on God through your tax-deductible financial contributions to help us continue in the work that He's called us to. You can make your financial contribution securely online when you go to drjamesdobson.org, or you can make that tax-deductible donation over the phone when you call toll-free. 877-732-6825. I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks so much for listening. Be sure to join us again next time right here for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.